I was angry with a friend. I told my wrath did end. I was angry with my foe. I told it not, my wrath did grow. I watered it in fears, night and morning with my tears, and I sunned it with smiles and with soft, deceitful wiles. And it grew both day and night till it bore an apple bright, and my foe beheld it shine and knew that it was mine. And into my garden stole, when the night had veiled the pole, in the morning glad I see my foe outstretched beneath the tree. Das war ein Gedicht von William Blake. William Blake ist ein Autor, der, ich glaube, im 18. Jahrhundert irgendwann mal unterwegs war und einen Gast, den wir heute haben, maßgeblich inspiriert hat zu dem neuen Album The Mandrake Project. Und dieser Künstler, von dem wir heute sprechen, hat auch mich schon zu vielen Dingen inspiriert. Zum Rebellieren, zum mich durchsetzen und zu einem ganz großen Stück Selbstvertrauen. Zu dem Gedanken, dass ich alles in meinem Leben irgendwie doch hinkriegen werde. Der Gentleman, mit dem wir heute sprechen, ist für mich persönlich besonders beeindruckend und deswegen bin ich auch bei diesem Interview besonders nervös. Und wenn ich besonders stottere, dann entschuldige ich mich. Ich meine, stottern kennt ihr von mir. Ich bin bei jedem Artist nervös, aber bei keinem so sehr wie bei dem, den wir heute zu Gast haben. Es handelt sich um Bruce Dickinson. Und bevor ich jetzt noch länger euch die Ohren voll laber, starten wir direkt in das Interview mit der Legende Bruce Dickinson.
Hallo und herzlich willkommen zu Pod of Rock, eurem Podcast-Magazin rund um Metal, Rock und allem drumherum. Präsentiert von EMP. Wir drehen den Verstärker für euch auf 11 und zwar jede Woche. Und jetzt viel Spaß mit einer neuen Episode Pod of Rock und eurem Host Josef Lex.
Bruce, we actually have one question from our audience that I would like to start the interview with. It comes from one of our social media followers called Tapio1949, and he asks, how did you come up with the idea to make a comic book series alongside your new album?
Well, the funny thing was is that the album back in 2014 was not going to be called The Mandrake Project. It was going to be called If Eternity Should Fail, which obviously got borrowed by Iron Maiden. But that album title came from a Doctor Strange comic. It was a Doctor Strange episode. And I'd been thinking about doing a comic with an album for, you know, a couple of years, and I was going and rereading all my Silver Surfer comics and Doctor Strange episodes, and I came up with a little story, and way back, like almost 10 years ago, the idea was it was going to be one episode, and maybe the album would tell the story of the comic. But moving on to lockdown. At lockdown, I was, you know, stuck in my room doing a bit of writing and thinking about the story. And it moved on to the point where I thought we have like a 12-episode, series here. So then I separated the comic from the album. Not completely, because obviously it still had some links to it. But it did me a favor because the album is now liberated and can do what it wants musically, doesn't have to fit a story, and the comic can just go off and be the story with a link to the album, if you like, you know, so I can put things in the comic which are, you know, related to it that people might find, you know, a bit fun. They can search out little Easter eggs and things. So that's how the two things ended up separate. And for me, comics is making a comic is almost like making a movie, because you're basically almost doing a storyboard when you create one. And I know I love the idea of trying to do a film, but films are really expensive, and paper is cheap, as one friend said to me.
Talking about movies, that's a really good tie into my next question. Your music videos, recent two videos, Afterglow of Ragnarok and Rain on the Graves, both evoke classic horror movie vibes, especially Rain on the Graves has like a really Hammer horror vibe to it. Are there any horror movies, any horror media that inspired that visual style, that aesthetic?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm glad people got the Hammer horror connection, because both myself and the director Ryan Macfall, we're both huge fans of Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing and all those old films, as well as, like, you know, the early Universal horrors and Frankenstein's and the Wolfman and things like that. So when I came up with the story, you know, so there's a priest wanders around a graveyard, and in the graveyard he meets the devil, who says, "You can sell your soul for one night with the house band of hell." And that's basically the story. It's very simple. The previous video, Afterglow of Ragnarok, was kind of cinematic, because Ryan followed the comic that we'd created. The only thing with Ragnarok, which I kind of regret, is that I didn't find Ryan as a director much earlier. Because if we'd found Ryan much earlier, Ragnarok would have had some elements the same, but you know, we would have had more chance to make it a more coherent story. The comic book that Ryan filmed was basically almost like a trailer for the first episode of the Mandrake Project. So doing a video of a trailer is not really the right way around. You know, you do a trailer of the video. So we did it, and it was all in a bit of a hurry, because we thought, oh my God, we have to get this out quick. So Ryan did a fantastic job, in my opinion. But then we sat down and went, you know what, let's plan the next one, and do the story. So the next one was much more everything filmed in camera, which made the editing a lot easier, you know, because there's quite a bit of VFX work on Ragnarok.
Staying on the topic of movies, if the cast of a horror movie had to perform a cover of any song of the Mandrake Project album, which cast of what movie would it be, and what song would you like them to play?
I think it would be oh my God, what's the Dusk Till Dawn.
Okay.
And Dusk Till Dawn, and they would be doing Resurrection Men.
A Resurrection Man, a very interesting song, has a very cowboyish feel to it, actually.
Yeah, well, it would fit right in with a Quentin Tarantino movie.
Absolutely. It's some of the songs, the Resurrection Man especially, have kind of a soundtrack intro-esque vibe to them. Was that planned all along?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. When I wrote back in 2014, I wanted to do, you know, that a little bit of a nod towards, you know, great soundtrack stuff that I love. I mean, and the master of all of it is, you know, Ennio Morricone. And I'm not trying to compare myself in any way, because I mean, he's unbelievable. But, you know, just to have people reference that and go, oh, it sounds a bit Ennio Morricone kind of thing. I take that as a huge compliment, you know. It was deliberate, absolutely. Because why not? Because for me, one of the things you can do in a you know, when it's my record and not say an Iron Maiden record, is you can start bending the rules, you know, with regard to what goes on, what fits on a metal record. Who would think that bongos and surf guitar would fit on a metal record? But it works great.
One thing about surf guitar on metal records is if you take black metal music and remove the distortion, you end up with something that's pretty much yeah. surf music.
Yeah, my wife would agree with you there. You see, she loves black metal stuff, you know.
There is another person that you've drawn a lot of influence from for the album, I believe, the poet and painter William Blake. There is a scene of you where you I have to grab the painting again. There is a painting by William Blake where God holds a triangular shaped tool into the direction of Earth, and that's a scene that's reproduced in the
the video
In Rain on the Graves, in one of your videos. What is your fascination with the visual art and with the poetry of Blake?
So Blake creates universes. He creates worlds with his poems. Not all of his poems, but his kind of long epic poems and things like that create, and they evoke a world of, you know, darkness and light and struggle for good and evil, and it's a really, really evocative poetry for me. And of course, he was also an incredible visual artist. So the two things together, he's pretty much unique. I can't think of another artist who hits the buttons both lyrically, if you like, and also graphically. And the painting you're referring to is The Ancient of Days. And what it is, it is actually a protractor, which is used to measure things, basically, and in particular for measuring architecture and things like that. So we referenced that painting. We actually drew the backdrop or painted the backdrop to be the backdrop of that painting, and then we had this protractor made up that I could just show very, very briefly. So yeah, everybody's clocked that one. There is another William Blake painting referenced in there, which one or two people have spotted, but it's a little bit more obscure. But I'll give you a clue. It happens almost immediately before the scene with the protractor, and see if people can figure out what painting or what poem that image comes from.
That's the first time we have an actual riddle proposed by an artist on our show.
There are quite a lot of riddles on the album, but in the comic, which will become more apparent as we go through the 3-year life of the comic. So there'll be more little riddles and things like that, that if people have really paid attention, they might have to freeze frame one or two scenes from Ragnarok and take a little look at some graffiti. But there's stuff which will be appearing for the next 3 years.
Awesome. Staying on the topic of comics, since you're not only now a author of a comic book, but also a big fan of the medium itself, what is your favorite panel inside of a comic book, and what does that panel show?
My favorite panel, you mean my favorite panel, or my favorite like place for a panel within a comic book?
Your favorite panel inside of an already existing comic book by another author.
Without naming the specific panel, I think it would probably be There's like a big double panel of Dr. Manhattan in Watchmen.
I also can read a little bit of Alan Moore in the visual language of the comic book that you are releasing right now. Are there any Alan Moore-ish other Alan Moore-ish references in the
Yes, I'm hoping to have a little bit of fun if we can with the Alan Moore-ish references, as in episode 4 actually, yeah, because episode 3 is already, the script is already done. Episode 2 is released in a couple of weeks, so that's at the printers now. So episode 3 they're drawing, and episode 4 I am writing the script as we speak, and it's going to be a really good one. The cover art for episode 3 is amazing. I mean, Bill Sienkiewicz is knocking it out of the park with the cover art for these things.
Bruce, we knocked over the 15-minute restrictive line for our interview.
Everybody's given up. They've all left, so we can keep on talking until they stop me.
Okay, if we still got time, I will take every single second.
Yeah.
We were at Alan Moore references within your work. What personally interests me, you've been in the music industry for such a long time, and you've done so many different things alongside your career as a musician. You've been a pilot. You're into fencing. Is there anything that you've ever tried that you failed so miserably at that you wouldn't touch that again?
Drawing art. I'm terrible. I can't draw paintings. I can't draw things. I'm awful at making a sketch and things like that. I mean, I look like, you know, my paintings look like a really, really not very developed 5-year-old, you know. So I close my eyes and I can see things. But and I can see stuff, but I physically can't connect my hand to a piece of paper and draw it. You know, I'm useless.
This is a very, very restrictive basis if you want to be part of making a comic book. But still taking that's really awesome.
no, because, you know, I mean, I can describe things. I can describe a scene. I can describe a shot, and I know exactly what it needs to look like. I close my eyes and I can see a movie in my head of exactly. I build the world in my head. I just can't physically put it on a piece of paper.
You've also wrote books. You've dabbled as an author before. There's so much to talk about with you, Bruce. I don't know where to start and where to end. I'm really sorry if the questions are jumping from tree to tree today.
That's all right. It's the way my brain works as well.
you've been an author. You wrote some books. Describing the things that you have in your head. Did the process of knowing that since you can't put visuals onto the page, repurposing your thoughts into words, did that come first, or did the I'm trying myself as an author thing first? That's a pretty hen or egg question. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah, so at first I was primarily interested in words on paper, and then I did a screenplay. And I did some treatments for videos and things like that, and did a bit of video directing as well and editing and stuff. So I started to get a little bit of an understanding of the language of you know, moving pictures. When I started to doing comics, I thought that what I would be doing is writing a kind of a screenplay, and then that would get turned into the comic. But no. Luckily, I've got an amazing writer called Tony Lee, who is helping me out with the scripts, and he's writing the scripts from my stories and my dialogue and things, and all, you know, we put in dialogue together, to be fair. So it's my story, and we're creating the script together, and it's a great learning experience, because I realized that it's absolutely not like writing a screenplay. And you just have to have it. Comics have a totally different feel to them. The dialogue has a different feel to a film dialogue. It has sometimes film type dialogue works, but a lot of the time it doesn't. And in a comic, you realize that people just talking doesn't really tell the story. What tells the story is the frames and what happens in the frame visually. And the words then give you information or give you feeling or emotion or things like that, and let you know what people are thinking. So it's just different to a screenplay. And that's great. I love it because I love to learn new things and things that make my brain creak and explode.
If the Mandrake Project was a screenplay, which one of the if the comic that is part of the Mandrake Project's framework was a screenplay? That's the sound to stop the interview, I believe.
But somebody walking out. Go on, yeah, go on, yeah.
But I will still tackle that last question if it's not bothersome to you.
Sure.
If the comic book to the Mandrake Project was a screenplay instead of a comic book, who would you love to play the characters within the comic book?
Oh, blimey! I was thinking you were going to ask me who would I like to do the screenplay and direct it, and the answer would have been Christopher Nolan.
that would also be amazing. Like,
yeah. I think you might as well aim high. I think Joaquin Phoenix as Necropolis would be genius. It might be a bit old now, so hey.
Oh, that's I think a very, very good pick. That dude really knows how to evoke like deep, intense feelings and characters with those
exactly.
Deep, intense feelings.
Yeah. But we're a ways away from that. I've got to finish the series first. Yeah, thank you very much. I'm getting they're taking me out and going to shoot me in a minute. So you know we have to finish, I think. Sorry,
Bruce.
All right.
I wish you the most of success that anyone can have with a comic book, an album, and whatever else is coming our way. That is that you will make in the future. This was an absolutely beautiful interview. Take care. I love the last 20 minutes very, very much.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. It was fun for me as well. That's all right.
Take
Cheers,
care.
Buddy.
Goodbye.
Bye for now. Bye.
Das war Pod of Rock, euer Podcast-Magazin rund um Metal, Rock und allem drumherum. Präsentiert von EMP. Und für Musik auf den Augen, werft doch einen akustisch formulierten Blick auf emp.de. Mit dem Code Pod of Rock erhaltet ihr satte Rabatte auf eure EMP-Bestellung und unterstützt so unseren Podcast.